Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Welcome to the Standing Committee GNSO Improvements Implementation SCI call held on the 24th of March, 2016. On the call today, we have Amar Elstar, Sarah Bakke, Wolf Ulrich Nobin, Angie Graves, Ann Aikman Scalise, and Lawrence Hawali Roberts. For apologies, we have Rudy Van Snick and Stefania Milan. From staff, we have Julie Hedlund, Mary Wong, and myself, Terry Agnew. I would like to remind all participants to please state your name before speaking for transcription purposes. Thank you very much. I'll turn it back over to Anne.
Yes, thank you, everyone. Appreciate your being present on the call, and I do want to express my thanks for all of the exchanges that we've had on the list that I think are really very helpful to the whole process in terms of analyzing how this is going to work, helping us to answer questions, you know, before they arise within our constituencies. And I especially appreciate the experience of those who serve on council or have served on council. And I'm confident that we'll come out with a complete type proposal as we work toward consensus. Looking at who's present, are there any, could I ask staff which constituencies and stakeholders are not represented in this call? Looks like we have more of a sub-team B participation than we do full SCI participation.
This is Julie Hedlund. Let me just quickly pull up that member list.
It looks like we're missing the registries.
Yes.
Okay.
The NCSG. The NCA. And the NPAC.
Okay, that's unfortunate. I wonder if I could ask staff to send a little reminder to those primary and alternate representatives about the full SCI meeting that was called for today. I know we always struggle with full participation, but it does make it harder when we put something out for consensus call.
Right, and I should note that I did, I think, get, this is Julie Hedlund, a affirmative RSVP, I thought, from Carol Douglas for the NCSG, but I think he was kind of, there was something that might, he wasn't sure absolutely if he could join, so that must have been then that he was not able to join. I don't think I heard from either Valerie or Yulf, you know, and of course, Rudy did plan to join, but, you know, then with the events in Belgium, you know, then had, you know, he originally did RSVP that he could join, so.
Right, excellent. That's a very good point there, yeah. And we can determine, it's Anne again, we can determine the procedure once we get to the end of the substantive discussion. I think it's very possible we'll have to have another full SCI call on this, but we'll see how far we get with our recommendations. And maybe, you know, just a follow-up note, and probably maybe don't need to include Rudy in that from my standpoint, but...
Say that it would be an unusual circumstance, definitely.
Yeah.
And I'll just note, Anne, again, Julie, I don't know if this order is, you know, okay for you on the agenda, but I had put the remaining issue on chair, vice chair elections first because that, you know, still needed to, you know, needed a fair amount of discussion. And then after that, the draft language on motions/amendments. And is that order acceptable, do you think?
Sure, I think that's great. And, you know, with respect to roll call, I think we'll just take those that are listed in Adobe as the roll call, as well as, is there anybody on the phone who's not in Adobe? is that looks like Wolf Ulrich has dropped out on the train, though. Wolf Ulrich did.
He's going to have spotty connections, so I'm sure he'll come back in as soon as.
Okay. Okay. And do we have anybody else on the phone who's not in Adobe? Hearing no one, I'll just ask for statements of interest. Has anyone had to update statement of interest or a change occurring? I don't think so. Apparently not. So thank you, and we'll move on. So some questions have arisen on the list, or just in our subteam B group, I think, with respect to proposed procedure for council chair election and conducting of council business. Where there is an opening in the vice chair position and there's no one who can continue. And I think Julie set out the scenarios very clearly. Scenario one, if both vice chairs are continuing, you know, subteam B has thought that we don't really have a problem. This is the procedure that was used in Dublin. And then the question that's to be raised, and I do think it's worth discussing briefly, are there concerns with the vice chairs conducting council business in addition to conducting the election if they continue in an interim term after the, in this case it's not an interim term. I guess in this case both vice chairs are still on council and there's not a new election of vice chairs or appointment of vice chairs occurring. So is there any concern with vice chairs conducting council business? I did not see in the exchange on the list any concern with that. So let me ask within Adobe Connect if anyone has a concern with the vice chairs who are continuing in office conducting council business. Would you please raise your hand? Okay, I don't see any concerns expressed there, so we're going to move on to scenario two. In scenario two, there's not a conclusive election of a GNSO council chair, but only one vice chair is continuing on the council, while the other vice chair's term is ending. And the question arose, and I should say that this was also raised by IPC leadership. In that case, would we just continue on simply with one chair, one vice chair, whoever that is, from whichever house, or would we also want to have the house that has the seat open be able to appoint an interim vice chair to participate in conducting the elections and in conducting council business? So the IPC leadership felt that whichever seat was vacated, the appropriate house should appoint an interim vice chair in that seat if only one vice chair is continuing. So could I ask for any comments, yay or nay, with respect to that proposal from the IPC? Amr, please go ahead.
Thanks, Anne. This is Amr. I certainly agree with the suggestion. I think it makes perfect sense. I would note, though, that in the event that the said house, if it should fail to appoint a vice chair for any reason, that the available interim vice chair should go on and continue conducting council business as usual and not have to wait for the other house to appoint an interim. Thank you.
Thank you, Amr. This is Anne again for the transcript. I do think that's a good point about the timing on these issues. I think there's a fair amount of urgency sometimes to certain council business, and so we may need to separately consider the question of how long each of these appointment processes takes, before we get down to scenario four. Angie, I saw your hand go up. Were you going to comment? Angie may be on mute. I'm sorry, Angie, we're not hearing you. If you're... Maybe... Oh, Angie. Oh, I addressed her point, she says, in chat. So she's in a loud place. So, that question that we do need to consider, should we be specifying the time frames in the sense that... if council business does need to be conducted, or if there are procedures that need to be followed for the chair election to get conclusively a chair elected, and the vacancy hasn't been filled, what sort of deadline, if you will, would be appropriate? And not having served on council, I'm afraid that I don't have the experience that would be needed to even estimate that time period. So some feedback on that point would be appreciated, especially from those of you who serve or have served on council. Is it 10 days? Is it 5 days? Is it and when is that triggered? Is it at the moment that the council chair election fails, or should we otherwise just leave it open to...
Which side is giving kisses? Kisses.
And I'll go ahead and recognize Lawrence on this point.
Okay. This is Lawrence for the records. With regard to the timeline, going through the operational manual that we have, apparently it states that after a failed election, we'll have to wait for a minimum of 30 days before a follow-up election can be held. And even where there's also an inconclusive election after that period, we also have to wait for another minimum of 30 days, which is about a month, for another election to be held, or for some form of intervention to have a leadership structure in place. So, based on, except if we're going to be going for some change, so to say, which might not be an easy route, the timing for elections definitely might have to draft it to fall within the minimum 30-day period. That's where I begin to agree with Amar's point that we might not be able to hold council activities down for a whole month, especially where you might have two or three calls scheduled. So with regards to the timing, I think, except if we want to go for some bylaw change, we will have to work within a 30-day framework. Thank you.
Thank you, Lawrence. I'm seeing a suggestion, and it's always good for us to keep in mind what the bylaws say about the time frame for election, but I do see a suggestion from Mary in the chat that's being discussed with Amar that relates to the appointment by a House to a vacant vice chair position when there's no chair elected, that suggests that this appointment could be made, I think, without affecting the bylaws, for requirement to do so by the next council meeting. And that seems to me to make a good deal of sense. In other words, the appointment would be an interim appointment, as I understand it, for this purpose of concluding council chair election and conducting any council business that has to be conducted during that period of time where there is no conclusive chair, but that the time requirement for that vacant seat of interim vice chair to be appointed would just be until the next council meeting. So I think that's a very constructive suggestion and one that would not cause a problem with bylaws. And I gather it would be triggered by an inconclusive council chair election, and that the House that has a vacant seat would need to appoint an interim vice chair by the next council meeting, before the next council meeting. So, Mary, could you comment additionally on that? Have I correctly summarized it? Go ahead, Mary.
Hi, Anna. Thank you. This is Mary. You have summarized it, and I've just put in the chat that the idea here is to not hold up any council business. It does give motivation to the relevant House to try to get an interim vice chair quickly, because as it is, we would have this potential shadow of not having a permanent chair, and that whole 30-day thing, as Lawrence was describing, goes on in the background. But as I think everyone has said, there's council business that still needs to go on. So we now have one vice chair in scenario two. Let's try and get a second vice chair up and running as soon as possible, hence the time limit.
Perfect. Thank you, Mary. Now, is there anyone else who wants to discuss that sort of time frame whereby the House would be required to appoint an interim vice chair in time for the next council meeting? And I'm thinking that this would also apply in the event that there would be two vacancies of vice chairs, which is actually in scenario three. So I will... because it's the same basic timing issue, I'll open that up for discussion as well, whether the time should be, you know, in time for the next council meeting. That seems to make a lot of sense to me. And I don't think, then, Lawrence, that it would cause a problem with the bylaws, because we're still talking about conducting council business in between that next council meeting and the 30-day provision that you discussed. So, Lawrence, I'll go ahead and ask, since you commented on that 30-day time frame, would you be okay with this proposal that a vacant seat has to be appointed for interim vice chair by the next council meeting after a failed chair election?
This is Laurie for the records. I think I'm okay with that, except if we want to go further to state maybe a number of days. Well, like you said, before the next council meeting, it's a good time. Apparently, between that time, whatever gap has been created has to be filled up. We could go a step further to say to give it in a matter of days. If we have 30 days with which to conduct an election, then we could propose that maybe between the first 7 days after a failed election, the House concerned has to conclude the nominating process, and so that we have enough time for the vice chairs to put the machinery in place to conduct elections, as well as to also conduct the business of council. Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much, Lawrence. And this is Ann again. I would also like to pull Wolf Ulrich back into this discussion since I see we have him back. Are you also online with the phone, Wolf Ulrich, or only in the chat? Well, it looks like maybe he's only in the chat. I'm hoping that by tracking the chat that we can see whether we have a fair consensus on this point of the time limit of appointing someone by the next council meeting. But we certainly can put it out after the meeting as well. So, Then moving on to scenario three specifically, that's the scenario where both chairs, vice chairs, seats are vacant, are outgoing vice chairs, and IPC had raised a question that it should be clear that an appointed interim vice chair is not prohibited from continuing as vice chair after the council chair election is successfully concluded. And that is, again, a matter of an appointment by the House. That's not, you know, so much an election process. And I think that what the IPC leadership was thinking was that the language, their service in those roles would end, needed to be clarified because that vice chair who was appointed as interim vice chair could, in fact, continue as appointed by the House in a more permanent role. And so, therefore, the service as vice chair might not end, but the service as interim vice chair would end. So if that issue is clear, we could discuss that for a moment. I'd appreciate it. And go ahead, Lawrence. I see you are expressing disagreement to that idea, and so we'd like to hear from you.
Okay. This, again, is Lawrence for the records. I remember that we said that anyone who will be stepping in as interim vice chair will have to recuse themselves from their desire to stand for the election. And so we would be asking them to be an umpire in their own game if or be giving them undue. I feel the reason why we were looking in that direction is not to give anyone some undue advantage. So if we're saying that the interim chair could as well go on to continue to be chair, it will mean that we're not giving we're not being fair to every other person that's coming out. That's my own personal opinion. It's not something I've checked with my own house. And then it will be negating that particular point that we brought out, that whoever it is that is coming out has to be neutral. Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Lawrence, for raising that. This is Anne again, and I do want to make a clarification, though, but maybe I'll go to Amr and ask him to go ahead and comment, and we'll see where we go from there. Go ahead, Amr.
Thanks, Mary. This is Amr. I actually had a question that I thought may be helpful in on the point that Lawrence raised. If it's a fair point, I was just wondering maybe if Mary or Julie could remind us, because I don't remember, when we did have incumbent council chairs who were running for a second or third term, perhaps, who would chair the meeting or the agenda item in which the elections took place? Maybe can compare that scenario to this one, even though one is an incumbent running for a second term and this one is an interim who may be running for a council position or a vice council appointment. Thank you.
Okay, Amr, there is one thing I would like to clarify before we go to staff on that issue. And when we had a discussion about people being disqualified from the serving as interim vice chair if they were running for council chair in order to avoid just the issue, this issue that Lawrence was talking about with conflict of interest, we said, no, if you're running for chair, you cannot serve as interim vice chair. However, the vice chair position is not an elected position per se. It's the question here is about an appointed interim vice chair being, if you will, sort of reappointed as the permanent vice chair after there's a conclusive council election for the chair. So I think there's a bit of a clarification about whether a conflict of interest might exist, and it may still, but I just want us to explore that. closely, because what we're talking about here is not an individual who's running for chair, but rather a person who's eligible to be interim vice chair because they're not running for chair, and then also eligible to continue as an appointed vice chair after the interim vice chair role has ended. So that I think that is the question that we're asking. And I see that Julie put her hand down, so I'm going to recognize Amr.
Thanks, Anne. That was really helpful. Just Amr again for the transcript. Yeah, in that case, if we're not talking about an interim vice chair who may possibly run for a council chair election, we're talking about an interim vice chair being appointed by his or her house to serve as the vice chair for the next year, then I don't think there should be any conflict of interest involved, because this is a matter of a house selecting its representative on the leadership team. If the house doesn't want the interim vice chair to continue, they simply won't select him or her. So I'm not sure I see an issue here. If we were talking about the interim vice chair running for the council chair elections, then maybe there my question would make more sense. But in terms of an interim vice chair continuing as a vice chair for the next year, I don't see much of a conflict of interest. Thank you.
Great. Thanks, Amr. And it looks as though I'm seeing in the chat that Lawrence is agreeing with that principle. He's observed, I think that flies, and he says that he does not see a problem with an interim vice chair running for, I guess, being appointed, as we say, within the House, continuing on in the vice chair role, as long as that person is not running for chair, which was the conflict of interest we were trying to avoid. And I see Wolf Ulrich is typing. So is Amr. So, and may I ask staff, do you have any comments on this in terms of being able to commemorate the a little bit of a change in language here that would not produce any confusion? Are we okay from a staff standpoint about adding some language that would clarify that this is all right? Go ahead, Julie.
Hi, Anne. This is Julie Headland. So my understanding is then that we want something added in here that says that the designated interim vice chairs would not be prohibited from being appointed as as vice chairs or ongoing vice chairs by their respective houses, something like
yes.
that.
Yes, that would be it. It's pretty much guaranteed, of course, that on the IPC side, oftentimes whatever language we propose gets, you know, their proposed modifications. I'm sorry. but I think that, you know, just a one sentence like that should clarify the issue. And I'm happy that my leadership's paying attention to this now. It helps us, you know, get things done more quickly. So I would be appreciated if you could add that sentence, Julie, and then we'll, you know, ultimately be sending that around to the full SCI. Okay, are there any objections to moving on to scenario 4? Go ahead, Amr.
Thanks, and this is Amr again. Yeah, I just wanted to, again, just flag the role of the non-voting NOMCOM appointee under scenario 3. I don't have a problem with the non-voting NOMCOM appointee's role under a scenario 4, where he or she would be appointed as an interim council chair. I'm just under scenario three, it's not so much a concern as just a question of whether it is appropriate or isn't. And I think I raised this before, and I don't know if we have any plans to kind of tackle that question or get an answer to it or not. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Amar. I appreciate your raising that because I think I missed it, and it is worth discussing. So the cons that, you know, Julie noted from our last meeting, not clear if there are concerns from the council or the NOMCOM for the non-voting NCA to be included or conducting council business. So there's a question here about the eligibility of a non-voting NCA to be appointed as interim chair.
And if I may, this is Amar. My concern here is not about the non-voting NCA conducting council business. It's about the non-voting NCA who is meant to not be associated with any of the two houses to be an interim vice chair for one of the houses. That's more what my concern is, or the question that I have. Because my understanding is that the non-voting NCA, as opposed to the two voting NCAs, is not associated with either of the two houses in any way. Each of the two voting NOMCOM appointees are each attached to one or the other house. So it wouldn't be a problem of maybe having one of them serve as an interim or even regular vice chair for that house. So my question is just the appropriateness of the non-voting NCA being associated with one of the houses, even on a temporary basis. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, Amar. I think, you know, if I could summarize the question, it might be whether it would be more appropriate in scenario three for us to recommend that only the voting NCAs would be eligible for appointment as interim vice chair in this scenario, and that the non-voting NCA would not come into play until scenario four. So let me just take a very quick kind of straw poll on this. If you agree that the non-voting NCA should not be eligible to be appointed under scenario three, could you indicate your agreement in Adobe? Oops, Mary is going to comment. So I can't seem to get anybody to vote on this, but Mary is now going to comment. So thank you, Mary. Go ahead.
You're welcome, Anne. And I wasn't actually buying time, but hopefully people will voice their opinions. I was just going to say that the point that Amar raised was discussed by the sub-team, and I believe that their feeling was that while that is a point to be noted, that was not a major concern. So now that Amar has raised this, I was wondering if members of the sub-team would care to comment one way or the other.
Great. Okay. Thank you, Mary. And Lawrence, go ahead and we'll discuss this a bit further before asking people's for a straw poll. Okay. Thanks. Go ahead, Lawrence.
All right. So this is Lawrence again for the records. Going through the operating procedure as it presently is, it doesn't in any way discriminate against the non-voting and the voting NCAs in terms of their ability to take over, to become chairman of council. The only condition provided for the non-voting NCA is the fact that if he or she were to become council chair, that person will not have a vote. And so if the GNSO operating procedure, as we presently have it, empowers the non-voting NCA to be able to vie for the highest office, so to say, under the GNSO Council, then I believe that if we begin to attach some conditions of some sort, we will need to justify the reasons why we are doing that, when such an office already has been allowed, so to say, to vie for that same office. It means that even if the non-voting, as we presently have it, if the non-voting NCA, she will step out to say, I want to be council chair, and he has, or he or she has the necessary support for that, they can, as we have it, become council chair and not just vote. So if we're asking such a person to step in, because we feel that this is a neutral position, and at the point where we've had field election, at the point where we're asking such a person to step in, we would have had field elections at least twice. And so it means that it's gotten to a critical point where we definitely need someone neutral and someone who is a part of the House. I believe it's better having a non-voting SEA take up that role and in having to invite anyone from other members of the, inviting other members of the community to step in to help us conduct an election. So if we're asking the NCA to take that role for 30 days max, minimum, maybe maximum, and help put in place an election that can provide some strong leadership, it's something that we should be able to accommodate. Thank you.
Great. Thanks, Lawrence. And let me then go back to Amer. I think that he's noted in chat that his concern was only expressed with respect to scenario three. But I do think, you know, Lawrence makes an interesting point that the non-voting NCA is actually eligible to be elected chair. Lawrence, you're showing more knowledge than I of the the procedures with respect to chair election. Amer, does it change your view or possible concern in regard to scenario three that the non-voting NCA is actually eligible to be chair?
Thanks, Sans Amer. Actually, it doesn't at all because like I said, I have no problem with the non-voting NCA being appointed an interim chair under scenario four. It's being appointed an interim vice chair under scenario three and being associated with a house that is that I find to be a little maybe just questionable. But I'm not clear on the procedures. For example, if when a house is selecting a vice chair under normal situations, would it be okay for the House to select the non-voting NCA? I'm not sure. I see Mary says that it should be up to the House. Yeah, that would make sense to me, unless there is some sort of conflict between the reasons why the non-com selects an individual to fill that seat, is that person meant to be sort of neutral of either of the two houses or not? And like I said, I will not vote no, or I will not object to this being included. It was just a question that I have and would like to hear thoughts of others. But to be very clear, I'm discussing the non-voting NCA's role as a vice chair in the House, not as chair of the entire council. Chairing the entire council is clearly not an issue. And as Lawrence noted, the chair would, in that case, be a non-voting chair and member of the council. Thank you.
Right. Okay, many thanks, Amer. And I would just like for staff to confirm verbally for the transcript that the non-voting NCA is otherwise eligible to be appointed vice chair by one of the houses. I see Julie has recited procedure. Each house shall select a council vice chair from within its respective house. So when you use the words from within its respective house, does that mean that the non-voting NCA is eligible to be selected as a vice chair? Thank you, Julie. Go ahead.
This is Julie Hedlund for the record. The operational procedures are silent on this matter. They do not reference the non-voting NCAs with respect to the process of the choice of the vice chair. I do see and agree with Amer, since the non-voting NCA is not from within a house, that would seem to suggest that because the procedures specifically say that each house shall select a council vice chair from within its respective house, that would seem to preclude the non-voting NCA, but the procedures do not specifically say this.
Okay, thank you. And I'll go ahead and recognize Mary. I think we'd all like to know if this were going to require a change in the language of the procedures, we'd probably be more reluctant than otherwise. Go ahead, Mary.
Thanks. And just to follow up on what Julie said, it does seem that for the, I don't know what the right term is, let's say for the House-appointed vice chair, the person who's going to serve for 1 year, that the language does seem to presume that that person has to come from within the House. Therefore, you know, if it's an NCA, it would be a voting NCA. So what we would then like to point out further, though, is that that is for the House-appointed vice chair that serves for up to a year. What we're talking about here is the interim vice chair. So I think in terms of what the SCI considers more appropriate, to the extent that this position that we're talking about is seen as interim and fulfilling a specific, potentially different function, then that could argue for allowing even the non-voting NCA to be eligible. That would not necessarily mean we have to change what's already in the procedures, because the procedures as of now only talk about the 1 year appointed vice chair.
Great. Thanks for clarifying that, Mary. I don't know. On balance, this is Anne again. It looks to me as though, unless we wanted to make a specific change for a very positive reason or an advantage to the council, that it might be best to stick with the existing eligibility provisions and say that this appointment that's interim is subject to the same eligibility rules in scenario three as the appointment for the more permanent vice chair position. I'm not aware of any particular reason why in this situation we should be opening that up to the non-voting NCA if the rules already say from its respective house. And is there something seen as a big advantage to be able to do that in scenario three? And I'm seeing that Amr's agreeing that it would be best in scenario three at least to retain the eligibility based on being within the appropriate house. And that Mary's raising the fact that is this the kind of situation where one house appointing a neutral non-voting person may be preferable? So that's one of those questions that I suppose we could put out to the full SCI, but I also see that both Lawrence and Sarah are agreeing that the eligibility in Scenario 3 should be limited to the same eligibility that applies to vice chairs that are going to continue to serve for the rest of the year. And that does seem simpler. In which case we would need to modify this Scenario 3 proposal and leave out, as Lawrence is noting in chat, leave out the non-voting NCA out of Scenario 3. So let me just ask that this way again, and I see a lot of positive input coming in the chat. If you agree that we should leave in scenario three, if you agree we should leave out the non-voting NCA and stick with the current eligibility rules that the appointed vice chair needs to come from one of the houses, please click your agree to that. I saw Sarah agreed in chat, I think, but Sarah, could I ask you to clarify? I thought that you had agreed to that in chat, but she did. She's clicking agree. I'm seeing a lot of agrees. Angie agrees. I agree. Amr agrees. Lawrence agrees. Wolf Ulrich probably can't hear us. I don't. So let's proceed then, staff, with that idea that we'll remove the eligibility of the non-voting NCA in Scenario 3. And thank you, everyone, for that very helpful discussion. It's great when we flesh out the issues, in that manner. It avoids, that problem getting raised later, and I really appreciate it. Thank you. So hopefully we can move on then to Scenario 4, and that is the scenario where the houses have failed. Well, Scenarios 1, 2, and 3 have failed, and we get into a position of last resort where we need for someone to be able to conduct council business, and the thought is that the last resort is selecting that non-voting NCA to oversee the election and conduct council business until such time as the chair is elected. It was a minor grammar comment from the IPC that this should be referred to as the non-voting NCA. And then there was a comment about some concern that if that person is just incoming on council and not experienced on council in any way, would we still move to that option? And some discussion as well that you might go ahead and move to that, given that it would be a deterrent to the houses as far as their failure to appoint interim vice chairs. It would motivate them to do so. And so the question then became, at what point would this happen? And earlier in our call today, we talked about houses appointing interim vice chairs as early as the meeting at which the chair council election fails. I think Wolf Ulrich noted in chat that a house could, in fact, appoint a vice chair right then and there. But it might take longer to get agreement within the House as to who should be appointed as interim vice chair, and so it could be as late as the next council meeting. And so the question presented here is time frame. Again, if the Houses fail to appoint an interim vice chair, by what point in time would the NCA start the non-voting NCA start conducting council business? Would it be as soon as the next council meeting? So I'll invite comment on that point. Go ahead, Amr.
Thanks, Anne. This is Amr. Earlier in the call in the chat, Mary had suggested setting a deadline by which the two houses could appoint an interim vice chair, and she suggested that deadline to be up until the next council meeting. I think this is a helpful suggestion, and it would also serve to sort of set a time limit when, in the event that Scenario 3, both houses fail to appoint interim vice chairs, and this decided presumably would be an extremely rare and scenario may possibly never actually happen. But in the event that it does, and by the following council meeting, if the GNFL council knows that both houses failed to select an interim vice chair, then at that point, Scenario 4 could kick in, and with the next council meeting, perhaps the non-voting NCA could just go ahead and take over chairing the meeting. Because in the absence of a chair at that point, there will be no one to actually chair the council meeting. So we do need sort of radical nuclear solution at this point. And non-voting NCA, I think, would be a suitable solution for this scenario. Thank you.
Thanks much, Amer. And Mary, did you want to go ahead and comment on that?
I did, if I may. And it's just an observation because, you know, as Amer noted, and I think as various people have said, this is really the last resort option, and it would be when three scenarios previously discussed don't work out. So this observation is really that if it does happen and this scenario four takes place, the practicalities of a council meeting are that the agenda would need to be put out before the actual council meeting, and we do try to do that, say, about a week in advance. So there may be a tiny lacuna here in this last-ditch scenario where really you don't have anybody up to the eve of the council meeting, so you may not even have an agenda. I'm not, from the staff perspective, suggesting a different timeline. One reason that we're suggesting by the time of the next council meeting is because, well, two reasons. One is that's easy to understand and it doesn't bind the groups to any specific timetable. So that's the benefit of it. But I just wanted to point out that the practicality of this last resort option might lead to a certain gap, which may, we hope, never arise. If that's relevant, I don't know.
Very good. Thank you, Mary. And it's interesting. I think that you raise a point that is relevant not only in the scenario four, but also in early scenarios where we're specifying a deadline for appointment of an interim vice chair. Because if, in fact, the agenda is set 1 week before the next council meeting, perhaps our deadline needs to be shorter than the next council meeting. I don't know if it needs to be 1 week per se, and I would ask those who sit on council or have participated on council to comment on this. But for the conduct of orderly business, when an agenda needs to be put out, perhaps we should choose, you know, 3 days or 72 hours or something as the deadline rather than the deadline of the next council meeting. And I'll go ahead and recognize Mary for her comment on this.
Thanks, Anne. And I'm going to try to not make things even harder, but obviously there also needs to be agreement on amongst the council. So this is a council affair now, as to the dates of all the meetings. So while typically, especially after the AGM, which is where all of this would occur, that's later in the year, we'd be looking at meetings for the next year. But typically, there's no council meeting for at least a month, you know, after an in-person meeting. So if the SCI wants to go down the path that you're suggesting, which is maybe to count backwards from the next council meeting, you could say something like, the interim appointment should be in place no later than 2 weeks before the next scheduled council meeting or something like that. I don't think that on the SCI we can cover all eventualities, but if indeed this is seen to be a possibility that we want to make sure that there is no gap, then maybe rather than saying by the time of the next council meeting, say something like not later than 2 weeks before the next scheduled council meeting. Just a suggestion. Thanks.
Thank you, Marian. I see that Amer is agreeing with you in the chat. I guess my question would be, what if there's some reason for a council meeting to occur within 2 weeks of the AGM rather than a month? When you say 2 weeks before the next council meeting, that could imply a requirement to name an interim vice chair immediately. I'm wondering if it might be clearer if we could ask that the House's appoint an interim vice chair within 1 week as a deadline of the failed council chair election. Does that seem like that is not enough time to the folks on the call? Or could we address most situations by making the requirement to name, and I see that Amr has dropped off the call. I think, Amr, that Mary had summarized the fact that, and he's back on now, I didn't hear all that Mary said, but Mary had summarized the fact that normally after the AGM, there's an entire month that passes before the next council meeting. But we don't know. I mean, there could be situations that arise where the next council meeting could theoretically happen within the next 2 weeks for whatever reason, you know, PDP that somebody needs to start, whatever. The question I have for the group is, do you think that it would be a reasonable deadline that after a failed council election, each house where there's a vacancy, that the House would be required to name the interim vice chair within a week of the failed council election? Would that be reasonable? Sarah says she likes the idea of prescribing timeline. I'm seeing to make them make a decision sooner rather than later. And I see that there are three agrees on the one-week proposal. Did I agree? No, there are. Okay, so we're getting several agreements checked here in the Adobe with the notion that after a failed council election that the houses would have 1 week to appoint an interim vice chair and that that would cover most scenarios. So I guess if staff could make that note, and I agree with Mary, not every single scenario can be covered, but that this might be, you know, the constructive suggestion for discussion purposes at this point in time. But I will go ahead and recognize Mary for her comment on that.
And,
go ahead, Mary.
And I guess this is a personal reaction, so I can't speak for Julie or other staff members. I personally think that 1 week may be a little short, given that if we're, and we're talking about the sort of so-called normal ICANN meeting, leaving aside the new meeting B, for example. But if we're talking about a normal ICANN meeting, which we have now, the council meetings take place on a Wednesday afternoon. So 1 week after that would really be the following Wednesday. Given that people will be traveling back in the interim, potentially on vacation or catching up on the day job, it does seem to be a little short to staff. So, you know, maybe as a form of compromise, you could say something like 10 business days or calendar days or something like that, just to give people that little time. I do appreciate that, you know, we do want the houses to be motivated to make a decision sooner rather than later. But like I said, there's a personal reaction, and 1 week,
right,
given that,
okay,
we're really looking at basically just two more business days, is, seems kind of short. Sorry.
Great. Thank you, Mary. And as we wrap up here, I will recognize Lawrence for his comments. I personally think that 10 days would also be fine. I don't think we want to use business days in the worldwide context because that does cause issues, you know, from country to country. I certainly could see 10 calendar days. I see that Amr has also suggested, what about 1 week before the next council meeting? Lawrence, go ahead.
Okay. This is Lawrence again, for the record. I feel we can walk around, or I want to suggest we walk around 14 days, which makes it 2 weeks, given 2 weeks from the AGM and 2 weeks into the next scheduled council elections. But another thing going further, I think it will help us if we have some insight from council members. I think Amal can help with that, since Wolf Oric doesn't might not be on audio, to give some insight to how issues like this, what normally takes place, because it's one thing to have all these structured out. We also have to apply it to how the council works. So, for instance, in between scenario one to three, what could be the possible challenges we would have in terms of administering this structure the way it is. Maybe we could draw some lessons from what's happened in the past, and when we had a failed election in the past, how were they able to reconduct the elections? What was the nominating process like? The House, I mean, what actually took place? Knowing these things might help give us a better idea of how to structure and plan in terms of time with what we are looking at right now. Thanks a lot.
Okay, thank you, Lawrence. And I see that we are actually over time. I would like to suggest that when staff is writing this up and sending it out to the full SCI, that this issue of the timing be flagged, that the suggestions be summarized. We have 10 calendar days suggested. We have 2 weeks suggested by, or 14 days suggested by Lawrence. We have 1 week before the next council meeting suggested by Amr. And I think that we need to flag those things so that we can be respectful of people's time that have to go on to other meetings. Would that be satisfactory from staff's point of view? I'm getting an agree from Julie. So I think we will, unless there's any other business, let's move on to when our next meeting might be. SCI has in the past had meetings a couple of weeks. I don't know what schedule we're on. I guess that's a little bit up to Rudy. Go ahead, Lawrence. I see your hand up.
No, sorry. That's an old hand. I'll take it down.
Oh, okay. So I'm not sure if the next meeting then would be up to Rudy or if we'd want to say that we'd like to try to schedule a meeting in 2 weeks or whether we want to send out a doodle poll again. But I do think that at this point, hopefully we could get the full SCI to participate on our next draft, and that determination should likely be up to Rudy. So that being said, it strikes me we could ask for a continuation on the list, as Amr has noted in chat, with our next draft coming out from Julie and Mary, and then getting this item on the agenda for the next full SCI meeting. I apologize that we did not get to the issue of motions and amendments, but certainly Rudy will be much better informed on that particular issue than I am. So unless there's any other business, I would say, as long as everything's clear to staff, that we should adjourn. Are there any questions from staff?
This is Julie. Just very quickly, just to confirm, the next call is 2 weeks.
I think that would be up to Rudy, because I do think it's probably the next call is a full SCI call.
Right. And it is. It would be meant to be the full SCI call, as this one was meant to be, and normally
right. They're
every 2 weeks. And what I would suggest to be able to get this on people's calendars is that we would put it on the calendar, but in sending the notice, we can, and when I send the notes today, I can confirm that Rudy, ask Rudy confirm his availability.
That would be perfect. Okay, thank you so much for your time. I'm sorry that we have run over, but I very much appreciate the substantive discussion. I think we've made a lot of progress on clarifying how this recommended procedure will work. So everyone have a good day, morning, evening, night, and we'll continue the discussion on the list. Many thanks, all.
Thank you. Once again, the meeting has been adjourned. Thank you very much for joining. Please remember to disconnect all remaining lines and have a wonderful rest of your day.